You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead. Enjoy the show. Podcast.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one
of
all time.
One, go. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the JRE Review. Joined as always by my buddy Garrett. How you doing, man?
What's up, guys? How are you? Happy, what day is it? Wednesday?
It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Or Tuesday, as we say in England, because it's a CH word.
Apparently. Is it really? I didn't know
that. Yeah, we say Tuesday and tuna.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. I've been here too long, so I say Tuesday and tuna.
Nice.
Fun facts for the kids there. So this week we got Michael Easter, a dude that wrote the comfort book. Or discomfort right. book. Russell Peters, a legend. And then Joe List, who's a comic I know a little bit about, but it was great to have him on. And he's a funny guy. He's a goofball. I like it.
Yeah, he is good. I like his delivery. I have a few things to say about him, but yeah, he's a good guy.
Let's jump into Michael Easter, though. I knew you would love this one, Garrett. Like, it's funny, there's certain podcasts I listen to, and I'm already anticipating, like, how you're going to talk about them with me. And right. So this guy writes a book about basically the importance of discomfort and how it kind of will mold you into something better. And right. and also the problems with, you know, no discomfort, to being too comfortable. Right. He talks about helicopter parenting, which is an expression we've all heard, but then snowplow parenting.
Helicopter parenting on steroids, basically. Huh?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting because you got to think who are like the softest people, right? They're like the snowflakes. Yeah. So if you're a snowplow parent, you're making them. Yeah. You're plowing through snowflakes.
Right. They always, my brother deals with that frequently here in California. It's like and Joe makes mention of it too. It's like you always want to have the best situation and set up for your kids. But whenever you take away all the comfort or all the discomfort for your kids, you don't allow them to learn anything. And in that case, they're going to be handicapped. I mean, for lack of a better word, later on in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's like that old saying, like the hardest thing you've ever experienced is the hardest thing you've ever experienced, right? It's like for you, if everyone's protected you your whole life, and then, you know, you've had no discomfort, no adversity, and you get thrown out into the real world, I mean, it's rough
Slap
out
in
there.
The face.
You're not going to be ready. Yeah. Everything's going to make you sad. You're going to get depressed. You're just going to fall apart.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting as children, too, how impactful they are. It's like I mean, that's got to be so detrimental. I don't know, your upbringing, I know we've had similar talks about how we were brought up, and I was brought up with a very, very hard-nosed dad. And, I mean, he would say that you could look back on it now, and I'm very thankful for it, but at the time, man, it was rough. But I don't think I would have had it any other way, given the circumstances that I see with other people that are like, just handcuffed by having life too easy as a child, and they just assume that's what it's going to be. It can be very detrimental to the future, you know?
Yeah, it's often quite easy to spot, like, spoiled kids, you know?
Really? Really easy. I don't know. I would say I'd say you're correct. I don't know. I feel like now that I'm later in my 30s, it might be a little bit harder to spot, but it's still there. But I would say that just because a lot of people our age have kids in their own families, I don't know, that dichotomy with their parents and how they interact at this point. But I would say that you're correct in that assumption.
But then, you know, the real question is like, okay, if you're saying that because you went through challenges as a kid and it was tough, right, you've become something that you know is beneficial to you. You're stronger because of it. But
right.
But there wasn't really like, it wasn't part of a rite of passage. It wasn't like your dad thought, and this isn't to say anything bad about your dad, right? But right. All, like with my life, for example, it's like nobody structured these adversities in order to help me in the future. They just happened to be that way. And luckily I didn't get more resentful from them. And I took responsibility for my part as best I could. And they have become useful. I'm like, wow, I'm more resilient because of this.
What,
you know,
without a doubt. Well, I think it just provides that life perspective, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, but something Micah was talking to is this like rite of passage, right? This like right. hero's journey. So, you know, right. you take like Native American cultures and some of the guys up here in Bozeman that I know, like know some of the tribes and the reservations and things and have like gone through some of their rituals. And right. there's this crazy one I heard the other day where you one that's more normal is like you go out into the wilderness and you make like a square, like you pick a spot, you make just like a big square, I don't know what it is, like 10 feet by 10 feet. And you stay in there for 3 days. You don't leave. Doesn't matter if bears come or you hear weird noises or whatever. For 3 days, you just have a sleeping bag. Maybe you can make a fire. I think you get some water, but you do nothing else. And this comes from a traditional, like, Native American rite of passage for, like, a young teenager. And it's, like, their way to, like, find themselves and become a man. So it's like, forced adversity, but, like, in a structured way to create, like, a more resilient person. And we don't have right. any shit like that, really, in our culture. It's like we just try to stay away from anything difficult.
Right. I want to just, this is something that you've heard of in Bozeman. How big is the square? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know 100%. I don't think it's that big. It's not that big. You can't leave it. So it's not like you're running around and doing stuff.
You can lay down in it. My
oh, yeah, yeah. You don't have to stand up for 3 days. Okay. No, it's not like a prison camp.
Some wild shit. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. They also said, I think he made reference to a tribe that would give you like a spear to go out and go lion hunting or something like that.
Oh my was life.
Didn't he say that?
Something I think
that
so, effect? Yeah. Like, I think so.
You go out with a spear and then you either come back or you don't, more or less.
Right, so like, which is what they call the hero's journey. It's like that movie King Arthur by Guy Ritchie.
Right.
Like, that's such a great movie. If you haven't seen it, it's with Jude Law. I watched it yesterday. It's fucking great.
Check that out.
Basically, he can't, spoiler, he can't, like, hold the Excalibur, the sword, Excalibur. Oh, okay. He can't hold it with both hands because he's, like, not strong enough. So he needs to go into, I think they call it, like, the Darklands or something. And he faces all these, like, you know, crazy animals and all this monstrous shit. And he, like, gets over his fear of all this stuff. And that's, you know, like, the hero's journey. Right. Then you come back a man and he's ready to take on the world.
Have you seen the Count of Monte Cristo by chance?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's my top two movies. I'll check out the one you just said.
Is it really? I should write that down. I'll watch that.
Write that down, especially just some outside circumstances that are going on. That would be an amazing movie for you to watch for sure. That's my favorite movie. One of my favorite quotes ever, and even in life, is Count Mondego says he's in this really rough situation. He's already been like in prison for X amount of time for committing a crime that he didn't even commit. He was just framed to do it. And at this point, when he runs into trouble, he's just like, do your worst. And that's always like, just I love that quote. Just do your worst. I've already dealt with a bunch of other shit, so come on, bring it on. Like, I'm ready for it. Like, that's you'd have to watch the movie to get the context, but
yeah, I gotcha.
You'd appreciate
it. Is it an old movie?
It's relatively old. Old. I want to say probably in the early 2000s.
I'll check it out.
For sure.
So what did you think about like the journey that he took, which is kind of similar when he went to, where'd he go, Alaska? Caribou hunting, yeah. with that guy that's like an outback dude.
Right. I mean, I envy that stuff, to be honest with you, especially being so, I mean, hands off. Like, I think about how I get my food. I will say, after listening to a lot of these Rogans, when I go to the store now, I literally get in my car, and the first thing I say is, I just say, God, thank you for giving me this opportunity to go get this food. I know how many other people don't have it that way. Like, I literally try and be conscious of that thought, but even just saying those words is still being disconnected. I get that. But, I mean, just to get out there in the wild and to actually, like, you think you got problems with your freaking Wi-Fi connection? Like, go to Alaska for fucking 3 weeks and survive.
Yeah, it's certainly going to change your perspective on a lot of things, I'm sure. Like, getting back and having a hot shower probably feels amazing.
I think I told you, I'm 58 days in the first thing I do is take a cold shower every day now. Ever since I heard Kamaru Usman on there and he talked about his journey, I haven't missed a day.
Oh, that's excellent. That.
But
good work. The hot springs near me in Bozeman, I've been going every morning in the weekdays.
Hell yeah.
And they have a cold plunge pool. And it's a hell of a way to start your day, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, it's the best thing for you. It's your body having to survive to some extent. It's like your metabolism speeds up. I just booked I have a sauna. I was going to tell you about this. I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you off the air, but I just booked a 10-pack of these sauna sessions, these infrared saunas that have a cold plunge in the private room. It's pretty pricey, but I've made reference to it many a time. That was the main thing that I've missed during COVID is the lockdown from the gyms and the sauna. So I can't wait to get back in there. And
that stuff's super beneficial, man. It makes a big difference, you know, when you're talking about health and these other things. But it's kind of like it has aspects of what Michael is talking about. It's like it's a struggle, you know.
Right.
Surviving the sauna is hard, and cold plunges are definitely difficult. And it's like it's almost like the rest of your day is a bit easier.
I think that's everything. I always attribute that to the gym too. Like you do the hard, you choose the hard shit, and then you can make the rest of your life easier.
Mm. I mean, Joe brings up he brings up his friend Dan Doty, that was the first guy to ever take him hunting, and he kind of talked about what it was like for his first kill and all these sorts of things. And Dan Doty is actually the guy that first introduced me to Bozeman, where I'm living now. Because he ran the men's groups and he mentioned it on Rogan and knew a good friend of mine. So I flew up to meet him, and because I was just fascinated with what he was saying. And he got me in contact with one of his best friends that he grew up with that lived in Santa Monica, actually Marina Del Rey. But, you know, that's when I set up the men's group down there and pretty much have been in contact with him ever since. But he talks about the wilderness expeditions, which my friend, who's a therapist up here, that's how he met Dan on these. And they would take, basically what they do is they take out young kids that have troubled, like been in a lot of trouble, and they take them into the wilderness and they like go through, like work with them to kind of, you know, because a lot of them have walls up. They think they're super cool, badass, like I'm too cool for this. I'm too tough for you. You can't tell me what to do. And slowly over the weeks, they just communicate with them and get to the bottom of like why they behave like that, like what they're fighting against. And it's really powerful stuff.
Oh, it's amazing. I had a similar experience. It wasn't in the wilderness, but I went to Guatemala. My junior year of high school. I went there for 10 days. I raised some money to do it. And I remember I had laid the foundation for an orphanage, and I literally just poured concrete for like 6 days. And then we like hiked up into these villages and just fed them. I mean, it was a church-based thing, but it was more of a help-based thing first and foremost. I mean, we did like services at night, but we were there to feed them and like just try and help them out. You know what I mean? Like literally that was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life was those 10 days. I look back on it. I was 16, 17 years old, just pouring concrete all day, but loving it. You go into those villages, you see one string of lights and a Fisher Price, like That probably dates me. People probably don't know what that is, but you see like a Fisher Price like amplifier with this like a phone. It's like something a kid would have like to have fun like singing songs. That's what they use to like talk to the community, and they had one string of lights throughout the whole community, and these kids running up and down this mountain with no shoes on, with the biggest smiles on their face, and it's like they just see life differently, you know what I mean? They don't have the iPads and the friggin' iPods and all the other stuff. They just have like real life stuff going on, and I mean, I'll never forget that. That was an extremely impactful experience.
Well, they're facing real adversity all the time, probably. They probably have
just hunger, no money, hunger and right.
It's probably really difficult.
Absolutely.
I liked the bit that they discussed about that doctor that was making meth for like the Hells Angels to get through college, yeah. And then became a doctor, and then ended up working in like sports rehab, helped the Patriots like win all this shit by kind of changing up strategies using a lot of data, and then created this thing where, what was it like? Like that everyone had to challenge themselves to something like really difficult. It was like separate from the training.
I ever since I've listened to that, I've done that completely. Like it's interesting. Just the mindset that these guys put into you. And once I hear that, I loved when he was like, if I could go 8 miles, then I could go 16. I could probably do that. But could I do 32? That might be a little rough. And then he's like, I'll try and do 32. And then you realize that your mind just like paints you into this box all the time.
And yeah, that sounded fascinating. I wonder, I guess the only way you could know is to test it, but I hate running for a long time, I don't know how it could.
I wanted to touch on this before we got out of this, but the thing that he was talking about, the two human things that we have that most other mammals don't have, is the ability to run long distances and the ability to carry our food out with our hands. He's like, it's not sustainable to try and carry food out with your mouth. That's why a lot of these animals don't eat the whole kill, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I was just kind of intrigued by that. And he was like, when I started just carrying stuff on my back and then doing hikes and whatnot, he's like, that's a good equalizer that you could do with people that maybe are not in as good a shape. He was talking about with like his mom, but has such a much like impact. And ever since he said that, like I was doing the stairs and I just started adding weight to the stairs. Oh man, it's only 10 pounds, but it's like small percentage is already changing. I can already see it's like crazy the fact that you could just walk around with weight, and that's how humans were supposed to, like, I don't want to say stay in shape, but that's just what they did whenever they went and gathered food. You know what I mean? You had the ability to carry it out, and that's how people.
That is interesting. Well, you know, the SEALs and like military, they're always rucking around. And I always just assume that's because they're always carrying packs anyway, so they got to get used to it. But maybe it's more than that. Maybe that is like what our bodies are designed for. And it could be connected to the ultimate way to stay in really good shape.
I think that's totally, I mean, I don't even want to say possible. It just is. That's the case.
Yeah, let me know how that goes. Like, see if, you know, if it's, like, a thing you keep up. Like, see if you can identify, like, how it changes just, I don't know, anything else. Like, energy, generally, how the stairs feel. Probably when you go back and you don't have the weight, the stairs won't feel like anything.
Oh, it's so easy when I go do those stairs, the stair climber now, and I go do those without the weights, and then I come home and I do my manual stairs with the weights. It's like I look forward to the stair climber now. It's like whenever he said he got done with that hunt, and he's like, I stepped up, like, I remember him saying that he took off his ruck and he stepped up like 24 inches or something. He's like, it was like I levitated up there. You remember him saying that?
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's true story. It's like the smallest incremental change can,
that makes sense. It's like training on a different planet, like changing your gravity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like it. All right, let's jump over to Russell Peters. This guy's a legend. Great connection to Joe. He's known him a long time. He gave Joe a watch once, which was a cool gift. Yep. And I'd never heard the whole story about it, but it was cool that they talked about it. Just that he was like, hey, you like my watch? And just it was just a really generous gift.
I love that he didn't even know he did it. That was the best part.
Yeah, he didn't even pay it. He probably does stuff like that all the time. I bet he's a super nice guy.
That's a good spot to be at in life. Like, fucking, when people remember stuff like that and you don't even make reference to it because that's just the way you are. I got to give Russell props on that.
Yeah, and also to Joe, because it wasn't just like a gift. He's like, oh, thanks, and just puts it away. He's like symbolically wears it for every comedy special. So it has this big meaning, and Russell didn't even know about that. It wasn't like Joe told him before. He was just like, this is the thing I do. This is like my lucky watch, and that's what I do with it.
I have a funny feeling. I just thought of this. I didn't think of this prior to the podcast, but I bet you that Russell Peters is one of the main guys that he's talking about whenever he talks about getting fucked over in divorces. Just based on the conversation they had. They didn't make reference to that, but you know how Joe's always like, I got a buddy who's still paying off XYZ and the girl doesn't even work, this, that, and the other. I imagine Russell might be part of that.
Oh, no. It's not him. I'll tell you who it is. It's a guy from News Radio when he used to be on there. It's a dude that used to be in a skit show, a Canadian skit show called, oh God, am I going to fuck this up right now? They made a movie called Brain Candy. Kids in the Hole.
Whose Line? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a guy from Kids in the Hole. He came into News Radio, I think, later in the show. He kind of like was the boss in the office. But yeah, I'm almost 100% sure he's the guy that Joe's talking about, that got the divorce and had to pay a fuck ton of money.
Gotcha.
I think they brought him in after Phil Hartman got killed by his wife.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, fair enough. He's a very funny dude, but yeah, he's had a rough time. But a lot of people have. Russell's a big jiu-jitsu guy. And even though he's only a blue belt, he's been training for some time. Absolutely loves it. Is a bit of a fanatic about it. And I think he trains with... I mean, he's trained with like all the best people because he can just get access to it.
John Jock, that's who he made.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. But I just love that. I love that he's so passionate about that sort of thing. Really anyone that I hear that, especially people that are older that are still training like that. I mean, Russell's not like in great shape. He even said that he doesn't really work out. He's not an athlete, but he goes there and he, you know, he's getting choked out. He's fighting hard. And it's,
I mean, I bet he probably beats me up. If, you know, I don't know. I don't have any, I mean, I don't know, but he's got some skills.
Well, he would beat you up at jiu-jitsu for sure.
Right.
For sure. I mean, he's done it long enough. What did you think about that hyperbolic chamber business that Joe's talking about doing?
I'm all for it.
Really? That seems a bit extreme, doesn't it?
I mean, we're talking about the telomeres thing.
Yeah, that's right. Lengthening your telomeres.
I mean, let's be real here. Joe has the best and most efficient and most accredited doctors in his life, I'm sure. And they're not going to sell him up the river. At least it might not have like the extensive studies done on it, but they would be telling him that for a reason. You know what I mean? I would imagine. I kind of trust his judgment as far as the experiences that he's had. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I think anything, whenever you're trying, I mean, we were just talking about the polar plunge and all these things that probably from the outside would just look like, oh, that's uncomfortable, but have a lot of health benefits.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in it. Like, it sounds like lengthening your telomeres is interesting. Like that's the kind of like the cap on your chromosomes, and it's a measure of age for sure. I mean, they don't really know what that means, but as your chromosomes reproduce and you get older, the telomeres, which are there to kind of protect the integrity of the chromosome, like breaks down. And I just remember this from my biology classes in college, but yeah, it's like there seems to be no way to stop that happening, at least was what I was taught at the time, you know, 5 years ago when I was in college. But maybe there's something new. Like, who knows?
Maybe that's the
magic fucking bullet to
potentially live longer. I keep getting the idea, and Joe makes reference to it whenever Elon's on and other people. It's like we're right on the cusp of like immortality, right? Mm-hmm. If you can make it through the next 100 years, we might develop something that just allows you to live forever.
I don't think we're supposed to.
I know we're not supposed to, but I feel like that's the thing. That's the goal. It seems like this whole idea of just like not letting life take its course.
Just
like,
be really super healthy to 100 and then sacrifice yourself to the gods.
Get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm. Be quick. It's gotta be quick.
Right.
Joe opened up a lot about the comedy club that he's opening. He's like, I think he's trying to keep it more and more of a secret, but he can't help himself.
What do you think that is? What, like, who's saying you can't talk about it?
It's just him. He's just like trying to keep it on the DL, you know, not making too big of an issue about it. Well, there's a lot of planning to go into it, and look, it's not like he can't promote the fuck out of it once it's made.
Right.
He has the biggest platform, you know, ever. But he's, you know, he's just kind of keeping it quiet. Maybe he doesn't want like fans showing up there before it's finished, that sort of thing.
And in hindsight, it kind of, the fact that I just said that too kind of builds it up even more. The fact that he's not talking about it, so when he does start talking about it, it's going to make it that much bigger, right?
Yeah, dude, it's going to be unbelievable. I mean, every comic is going to want to be there.
When are you moving to Austin?
Yeah, right. I don't know, man. I don't know. I was really considering it when I was in Nashville. But if you think about it, think how long you would have had to wait. Like, yeah, like some of those guys are getting to perform now, but they're, you know, it's like Tony Hinchcliffe is performing, that girl that came on, that opens for Joe. Like, they're already pretty established comics. There wasn't going to be like an open mic scene for a long time. So, right. I don't know. I just didn't trust COVID to like pull itself together and continue doing stand up. So, I just said to myself, well, let's make a different change. I did see some live comedy the other day here. Some comedians from LA came out on a tour, and some of the open micers were here. There was major bombing that was really uncomfortable, and there were some good open micers, local people that were pretty good, to be honest.
I feel he's kind of put Bozeman on the map a little bit too, to be honest. I mean, he has a lot of his guests are talking about hunters and whatnot, and they always talk about it. But it seems like he's
got Bozeman. Well, Dan Doty's from here, Steve Ranella, both from Meat Eater, so they come on, and that's how he's seen this place. And Bozeman is, I mean, it's blowing up. It's
right.
There's so much construction here. House prices have gone up like, God knows, 40% in like the last 10 years. Like, it's crazy.
Jesus.
Yeah. Right. It's a nice place. Nice place. Yeah. But it's not the energy that Austin has. And if you're going somewhere to, you know, create a comedy scene and also have like basically, you know, city life and a lot of people around, this place is too small. I mean, we've had episodes of this podcast that have been downloaded by higher numbers than the entire population of Bozeman.
That's crazy.
Yeah, listening to us morons talk.
What does that feel like? Do you feel like you're part of a community there, or are you still detached? What's that kind of vibe?
No, it's fine. I mean, Kron Gracie came up here, so now we have an incredible jiu-jitsu school, and all the guys over there are great. And you bump into them all the time, and it's like that becomes like its own little, you know, community. Like, everyone's always saying hi because it's like, we go do that. And then there's a lot of that kind of group stuff. Like, I go to a rock climbing gym, bunch of people there, same thing. Like, they're just nice people up here, so it's very welcoming and friendly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like it's a good spot, man. Good spot. Let's jump over to Joe motherfucking List. Funny guy. Funny guy.
Dude's been in the game for a minute, huh?
He has. You know what was funny when I was listening to him? Because I didn't read the thing about him when I started listening, and I was just kind of working away. And I'm like, God, this guy sounds like Mark Norman, who's another comic out of New York. They talk almost exactly the same, even the way that they do their jokes. And to hear that they have a podcast together is hilarious. Like, I definitely want to listen to some episodes of that.
Don't you get some Neil vibes from him too?
Neil Brennan?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a clever thinker.
I mean, he looks like him a little bit too.
Oh, he does? I didn't see what he looked like.
Yeah, he looks a lot like, I mean, yes, he does. Once you see a picture of him, you'll be like, all right, I see the resemblance. But such a weird dichotomy to have people that are in such like a, I think a lot of people that are on in the spotlight doubt themselves quite a bit, but the amount of references that he like doubts himself during that podcast was like, I don't want to say uncomfortable because I get it. And people are like, once what you like are always watching what you say because you don't want to get canceled these days and you don't want to say something stupid. But the constant reiteration of how big the platform is, we've made reference to this too. It's like, I realize I'm on the biggest podcast. That was probably the dumbest thing you've ever heard. It's like, let's stop saying that shit over and over again. I guess it might just be what happens whenever you're under the spotlight to say something like that. And it's just like a nervous reaction, but it's a rough go whenever you hear it from my end. And I hear him be like, that's probably the dumbest thing. And you hear him say that like four or five times. And I realize that he's trying to be self-deprecating, which is okay. But it's a rough go to like keep reiterating that stuff. Cause it's like, well, how's Joe supposed to respond to that?
Well, I think that some of the people that go on his show are just starting to get popular in their own way. So right. They are still in the trap of like reading comments, looking at reviews, reading articles about themselves. And
that's fair.
And, you know, any like you could have 10 good reviews, 10 good articles and one bad one. And that bad one that ruins your week.
That's the only thing you think about. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you go on Rogan. And I mean, there's probably 1,000 comments left about this podcast. So he knows that one, he's going to look at them and he's already anticipating what they're going to look like. I would recommend not ever looking at those things. Don't do it.
I've had this conversation with you. I just find it interesting that people take the, I almost look at it as like a term of endearment. Even if they say something shitty, it's like you took the time to listen to that and then you took the time to write something on top of that.
Yeah. I really enjoy the bad reviews that are like really cleverly worded. Like they're trying to sound really smart. I'm like, oh, so you're a grumpy asshole and you're intelligent. Well, that's nice to know. I'm glad you could justify it.
Thanks for spending your time on the keys for me. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm too busy. I don't have the time. Yeah. If I listen to a podcast I don't like, I just don't listen to it again. That's your choice.
Absolutely.
You know, 100%. What are you really trying to do? Warn other people? Like, some people like, might like it. So just
You're the Yelper of podcasts.
Well,
fuck you.
It's not like, I don't even know how useful it is. Maybe it is, but I kind of feel like, look, when you look at reviews on Amazon and you're buying a product, I think it is important to look at that star review because some things will say that they're good and they're garbage and they break all the time. That's important to know. But I mean, like a podcast, it's like, well, if you're listening to it, and it's not something you're interested in, then that it's just something that you are not interested in. But some people probably are. If it exists, I don't really get the value of that. I've given plenty of 5-star reviews to different podcasts that I've listened to, and I've listened to plenty that I didn't care for at all, and were just kind of boring. But they don't affect me. It doesn't upset me so much to where it must come from some sort of like envy and jealousy. Like, how dare you have this podcast and I don't have one? So yours
must
suck. That's
what it comes down to.
You're like, all right, dude, chill out.
He's made reference to that many times. The people that are making those kind of comments are not happy in their own lives. Like, to waste energy on some, like, to talk shit on some other people's stuff is just like, what kind of life are you leading in order to do something like that?
It's probably true. They probably are miserable assholes, I would imagine.
Right.
I couldn't imagine that they're like well-rounded, have a lot of shit going on in their lives and running their lives really well and taking the time because they feel like it's important to pass on this message that this podcast certainly does not need to be listened to, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You're like, all right, dude. Okay, cool.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's the cancel culture is, and the vast majority of it is just complete.
Just angry people. Just angry people.
Angry
at themselves.
Yeah.
Just, fuck you too. You're shit. Really?
Maybe you hate yourself, bro.
I think the internet,
it doesn't matter if you say every single thing politically correct, you're still going to have haters no matter what. Like, I think that's pretty evident.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Can you imagine, like, 30 years from now, like, if we're still running and alive, like, you know, our friends' kids or our kids, like, pulling up these old episodes and going, yeah, I can't believe that you said that. I'm like, it was 30 years ago.
Dude, there's no way that's going to be that. There's no way that's going to be the reality in the future, because he makes reference to it in other podcasts. But, like, whenever we start to communicate without having to talk and we can start, like, seeing intent prior to, like, language, that's going to, like, alleviate a lot of the bullshit. You know what I mean? It's gonna suck for salespeople, but once you just realize what intent is, and you don't have to have the language that's associated with it, you can just somehow with the Neuralink or whatever figure out what you meant to say without even saying it. It's gonna like alleviate a lot of the bullshit, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. That's actually the number one thing that I like about that idea, and I'd be curious if somebody was super opposed to the idea of Neuralink, because I would be like, what are you worried about us knowing about you?
Yeah,
like,
you're
is
a liar,
it that we're going to find out? Yeah, you're a liar, you're angry, and...
You're a fraud.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's going to come down to. I mean, those are going to be the only people that push back, because even Joe says that. He's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm saying, like, what I mean. It might rub some people the wrong way, but at the end of the day, I'm a good-hearted person, and I believe that. So
I don't think... Yeah, I wouldn't care either, and it probably would uncover some things about me that are not good. And I'd be like, oh, I'd be open to it. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I do that sometimes. I do,
right.
Like, while I'm waiting in line at a Starbucks and someone's taking too long to pick their order, I might not say anything to them, but I might think to myself, will you fucking hurry up, bro? It's Starbucks. Right. You know what you're doing.
I will say that might be a benefit to reading the comments too, because I'm not opposed to like constructive criticism. And I will say, if I go back and read a comment and I see somebody say something that I could have done better or at least taken a better view on,
yeah,
that could be an opportunity to use that in a good way. Dude,
you know what I mean? Dude, read our comments. There's no constructive criticism. It's just like, these guys are morons. I'm like, okay, cool.
Sounds good.
You know, it's more actually the most constructive ones are the good ones. Because they actually sometimes explain a little bit why they like it.
Yeah.
And that's actually kind of useful. I would be totally up for constructive criticism. Like, hey, this show would be way better if they did X, Y, and Z. Or the sound sucks. Or
they talk
about the podcast too much, which we're doing right now. You know, something. Because then I'd be like, well, maybe we shouldn't do that as much. It's fine.
Yeah. I think, I mean...
We're not exactly professionally trained, let's be fair.
Please do that, people, if you have the opportunity. We love those comments.
Yeah, and try and write nice ones, too, if you can. If you can find in your heart. I appreciate it. what did you think about this story when Joe first got to Austin and he went down the wrong road? What was it, like 6th Avenue or something? And those guys were, like, going to attack him?
Yeah, that's always scene and setting, and the way he interprets too. He's like a skinny little dude. When you see him, he looks exactly like Neil. If you're walking down, I don't know if you've ever been to 6th Street. It's pretty intense. It's Venice Beach, but not with the tents and stuff, but there are some street people around there. And I mean, given the circumstance, if you're new to a city and you're walking down, you're a 150-pound white dude approaching some big dudes walking down the side of the sidewalk, and the way he approached it too, he's like, I just stepped off the sidewalk. It's like, what else are you supposed to fucking do? You know what I mean? Like, and they started calling him like this, that, and the other. And it's like, obviously he interpreted it a certain way, but I don't know. It's an interesting take on the whole scenario. It's like, I'm sure from the outsiders that come from, let's say, Missouri and walk down Venice Beach and see what the fuck's going on, they got to have a weird, they're going to have a story to tell when they go back to Missouri. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, it is what it is. That's definitely the seedy spot, but I don't want to say I'm a man of the people, but I enjoy being in those kind of rugged environments, to be honest.
I never felt unsafe walking around Venice. Yeah. I mean, some of the shit that they're posting online now, but like you've said before, they're probably just putting up the worst stuff.
So absolutely. It's like put your head down.
I never felt in danger. Like, even my old roommate, she was 26 and a girl, and if she was like, yeah, I'm just wandering down Venice, you know, boardwalk, I wouldn't be want me to come meet you? Like, I knew that she'd be all right.
It might be, well, I wouldn't do that at nighttime as a female, potentially.
It wasn't ideal. I don't think it ever really came up, but I would probably ask her, like, do you feel safe? Like, is it okay? And if she was like, it's cool. I'm just saying it's not, I wouldn't be overly worried about it.
Yeah, you're not walking through. I mean, I don't even know what Compton's like, but I just think about back in the day. Yeah, you're not walking through that. I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. they talked about the New York Times article that said no reported case ever from people outside getting corona. How angry does that make you? Like, look, we can talk all day and be like, look, they didn't know, they were doing their best, blah, blah. I think that they would have realized pretty quick that no one was getting it from being outside.
Dude, if this, we don't have to go back and just reiterate, but it's like if everything that we've noticed throughout this corona deal has all been for show, it all has been for show. And it's all, I believe that was in the one narrative that he was talking about. It's like they started talking about get me back on track there. I lost my microphone. I'm sorry.
Oh, about COVID and being outside.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even with the mask mandate and, like, being outside, he said that, I can't remember. He's like, the stat was, like, under 20% of the people that go in the ocean get bit by a shark, when in reality it's, like, 150 people. So it leads you to believe that it is a true statistic, but the statistic is so overblown that it just puts it out of perspective. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was a lot of that happening, for sure. It's like... Let's not bang on about sense. It. I don't even want to get into COVID shit today. But
yeah,
that one thing though really kind of stood out. I'm like, holy fuck, we fucked this up. It's just kind of annoying.
I never really felt that way. I wasn't part of that community that was just sitting inside thinking that was a reality.
Yeah. For me.
But I hear you.
Back to the one thing Joe List kind of referenced at the end, and Joe got into it too, is kind of along Michael Easter's point of the adversity thing and the power of bombing on stage as a comic, like how difficult it is, how much it hurts. Like every comic has been through it. Everyone knows. And it is the thing, even though it's the worst thing you'd ever want to happen to you as a comic, it's the thing that makes you better. It's the thing. Now, it probably drives out, who knows, 8 out of 10 comics probably quit due to multiple nights of bombing because it's so brutal. But if you survive it, right, and you continue on, then it is the key thing to becoming like a bit. It's like the pain, that painful failure. It like makes or breaks you, right? Decide you need to work harder at it or become a quitter. It like defines how you're going to move through a lot of things. And I have to say, like, when it comes to resilience, just in general, even though comedians often are, you know, they're kind of damaged people. They're a little loopy. They've had some rough times. But, man, are they resilient. Like, if you're a comedian that gets to tour and you've really been in the game for a long time, I mean, in a lot of ways, I can't imagine that there are too many stresses that really could get to you.
It's got to be good to be comfortable with that too, like to be in Joe's spot or be in Dave's spot or be in any of those like well versed comics that have dealt with a lot of like hecklers and stuff. They're just like, look at this fucking asshole. They've already know how to deal with it just because they're like, once you've grown a few calluses and a backbone, there's got to be a lot to be said for that, just how it is in life too, you know?
Oh, for sure. And look, it's not just that. It's like, The reason they can handle them so well is because they got destroyed by hecklers in the past. They got uncomfortable. They felt terrible. It like ruined their set. They got angry. Yeah. They had to calm down and realize what it was and then start developing strategies for like crushing these people, which is why comics do it. They're like, hey, just so you know, don't do that again. And
you have a frame of reference to draw upon, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Absolutely.
Well, that's it for this week, guys. That's the breakdown. We were going to do Reggie Watts, but that was actually from last week, so we skipped that one anyway.
Shout out to Reggie Watts.
Reggie, you legend.
Love that cat.
Champion. You legend. Champion of a man. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. And, like Garrett said, if you want to write a review, if you hate us, try and make it constructive. And if you like us, tell us why. We really appreciate that stuff. We love hearing from you guys. Okay.
We love hearing from you guys. Appreciate
Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Peace and love.